Welcome to the Mystery Twins Detective Agency. I am Liam S. Smith, and this episode, I accuse a real-life author of murder.
I'm Regan Lloyd, and friends, the idle brain is the devil's playground. Oh, we got trouble right here at LSN with...
What's that?
It's from The Music Man.
Oh, I only know that as something Jesse Thorne talks about a lot.
Ah, well, you should watch it. It's very good.
Okay.
But don't watch the remake, watch the original.
So there's this music man, and he's some sort of con artist or something?
He is a con artist. He doesn't know how to play an instrument, but he just goes from town to town starting up boys' bands.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, and then collects all the money for, like, the instruments and outfits and stuff, and then just leaves.
One day he's going to run out of towns, that there music man.
Well, see, he doesn't count on falling in love with the maiden lady librarian piano teacher.
That's rule number one, never fall in love.
Exactly.
Just in life in general.
Well, I feel like Mr. Matt Shade and Ms. Angie Everett need to take heed of that.
Yeah. What would Jules think?
She'd probably be super down with it, to be honest.
Yeah, they seem to like each other. Today we watched the fourth episode of Private Eyes, entitled...
Private Eyes.
The Devil's Playground.
Yes.
This is about authors and secrets and lies.
Yeah, it was a good one. Also, again, nice to have not actually a murder.
Yeah, but I miss the murders. There was attempted murder this time, though, so that's something.
Yeah, that's true. At least someone else wanted the murders as well.
Yeah, and he would have gotten away with it too if it went for those meddling private eyes.
Oh, honestly, what are they like?
Okay, do you want to just jump on into our persons of interest for this week?
Yeah, I guess we've got nothing interesting to talk about.
Well, we did just record yesterday, so not a whole lot has happened since then.
No, but this will be released a week apart. Let's just pretend that we've lived a whole other week of our lives.
Oh my god, I went to Belize and did all the things they have there.
Belize?
Yeah.
What a wild card choice. I went out for brunch. It was good.
What'd you have?
Smashed avocado.
Oh.
I am going out for brunch as soon as we finish recording. And I did specifically pick the brunch place based on the fact that this place had smashed avocado.
You'll never be able to afford a house if you buy that sort of avocado.
Well, yeah.
You ain't going to get a mimosa?
Listen, I might.
You're going to have some mimosas and samosas?
I don't know that they would go very well.
Oh, they certainly
together.
Wouldn't.
You know what I've gotten really into lately? I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast, but pierogi?
No.
They're like little Russian dumpling.
Oh, well, you open them up and there's a smaller dumpling inside it?
But they're really good. They're just like full of, it's like a dumpling that's full of potato.
Sounds good. And let's all go out for pierogies.
Like, let's. I'm going to find a recipe and actually make them so I stop just buying them. But they're really good. I would highly recommend.
Okay. Jason Priestley plays Matt Shade, retired hockey player and newly minted private investigator.
Yes.
Jason also voiced Sketch in Creative Galaxy and Jack McCyber in Biker Mice from Mars.
They both sound like top quality programs.
Biker Mice from Mars is pretty top tier.
Oh, is that like a thing that you are familiar with?
Oh, yeah. I had a Biker Mouse toy when I was a kid.
Cool.
He had little antennae, which is atypical for mice, and also a robot
that
arm. And he was hella cut.
All right. Oh my god, we've got mice in our house, and they've been like getting into the protein powder. We're gonna have the most swole mice. Anyway.
Cindy Sampson plays Angie Everett. She is a professional private investigator in the long-term variety.
And also Matt Shade's boss.
Yeah, he's a bad employee.
He is a bad employee, but their relationship is about to get a lot more complicated when it's both work and
life.
Private eyes.
Thank you for that musical sting.
Well,
now I can seamlessly insert a commercial break in there.
Yeah, perfect. I'm really just doing you a favour.
Cindy also played Cindy Lanham in Being Human, presumably the US version. I think that's that show about ghosts and werewolves and stuff that live together.
I'm pretty sure I saw a lot of tube ads for that
recently. On the tube or on YouTube?
On the underground tube.
Ah.
B because if I lined up with a particular person on the poster, I assume it was Being Human, I'm not just thinking of a different show, then I was always right in front of the doors when they opened.
Nicholas Campbell plays Frank Garrison, our victim this episode, and reclusive author.
Yeah.
He wrote a book called The Devil's Playground, which earned him his fortune and also drove him to reclusiveness. Sure.
We should specify this is the character, not the actor.
Yeah.
Because I was originally like, oh, that's so weird that he also wrote a book. No.
Nicholas also played Dominic Da Vinci in Da Vinci's Inquest and Sporty Lewis in Cinderella Man.
Sporty Lewis?
Sporty Lewis, hello.
Amazing.
He's joined by his estranged daughter, Joanne Boland, as Eliza Garrison, aka Mrs. Summers in X-Men Apocalypse.
Oh.
I assume that's the mother of Cyclops.
I couldn't tell you.
Sort of a surrogate daughter figure and also mentee to Mr. Garrison is Laura Silovitz as Sarah Marcinet.
Mm-hmm.
She's an aspiring daughter and they share a dark secret.
An aspiring daughter.
Aspiring author, sorry. Oh, Sarah, there's nothing I want more than to be your daughter.
No, but like tragically, she kind of is an aspiring daughter.
Because if you kill someone, you get their family.
Yeah.
She played Scarlet in Space Riders Division Earth.
All right.
I feel like if you're a space rider, that's a probably a disappointing division to get.
That's true, yeah. You probably want to be like the...
Mars.
Venus.
Uranus.
Jupiter. Alpha. Jupiter would be the best one to be a space rider because you could ride on the rings.
Oh, no, that's Saturn. That's Saturn.
That's Saturn. That's Saturn. I would just like to make sure everyone knows, in case you edit this wrong, that I did say it's Saturn first.
Duly noted.
By edit it wrong, I mean throw me under the bus.
Sure, yeah. A couple more people we need to get to this episode. This is a longer persons of interest because there's just so many interesting people in this episode.
So many interesting people and so many people who have motive to kill.
Yes. Or at least attempt to kill.
Yeah.
Patrick McManus plays Elliot Powers, publisher and longtime associate of Frank Garrison, the victim. Patrick McManus has had a long career of bit parts, including Inspector in Summer's End and Canadian Lieutenant in Anne of Green Gables, the continuing story.
Anne of Green Gables is a great book series.
I really know what it is.
It's like a... just like a classic thing.
It's about this Anne, and she's like a girl in, I don't know, Civil War era America.
I couldn't even tell you what era it is, but...
I'm just guessing.
She's a feisty redhead.
And she's got these Green Gables.
Anyway,
our last couple of people. Pascal Langdale plays Will Schmidt, famous television personality and design guy.
Yep.
I guess they do house design, fashion design, it's unclear.
I think it was interior design.
Oh, okay. Pascal voiced Ethan Mars in Heavy Rain, the bad video game where your son is kidnapped by a serial killer and you have to find him before he drowns.
I've played that. I haven't played all of it. I want to finish it. That's the sort of video game that I can play because it's just like press A to think.
Spoiler alert, the identity of the...
No, don't tell me.
...of the culprit really undercuts some of the earlier storytelling.
Okay.
That's all I was going to say.
Okay.
And his partner, his homosexual life partner, Tom Allison, plays Gil Schmidt. Will and Gil, isn't that quirky?
Oh, that is quirky.
Tom played Pri in a show called Killjoys that I didn't look up anything about because there was a lot of people.
Listen, I don't blame you.
And finally, the show has Thomas King as himself.
Oh, okay. So is he the writer of the show?
No, he is just a writer and activist. He does a lot of writing about the plight of the native peoples of the American continent.
Oh, because I saw his name come up in the... I thought the author's name was Thomas King, but then I saw Thomas King come up in the opening credits, and I was like, oh, maybe I just made that up. Anyway, so...
No, he didn't write it, but he was in it, and he has done other writing, including The Back of the Turtle, The Dead Dog Cafe Comedy Hour on CBC Radio, and...
That doesn't sound like a great comedy hour.
Green Grass, Running Water.
Okay, there you go.
So he's in this episode. I didn't know that he was not a real person, not a fictional person, until I did my research.
Yeah, me neither.
This episode begins in a cafe.
Yes. Matt Shade trying to buy some coffees. Oh no, what's that? He didn't give the lady his bank card. Oh sorry, that's just my ID. I'm a private investigator.
Look how private investigator-y my private investigator card is. Oh, aren't I so mysterious and sexy?
There were some fun top quality bants in this episode.
Honestly, maybe it's because we watched it 2 days in a row, but it was kind of grating on me by the end.
I thought that, like, the bants were better in this episode.
Okay. His daughter sasses him for a bit for obviously showing off, and he's like, yeah, but no, I just got it.
Yeah.
They're at the cafe waiting for Jules' new study buddy, but who should show up first but Angie Everett, private investigator.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm not your partner, you're my employee, get used to it.
And that he does.
And finally, this study buddy does show up, and Matt Shade experiences conflicted fatherly feelings because it's a boy.
Now, let's
address the elephant in the room. Let's address the fact that this guy's name is Liam, and it's very distracting for me.
Oh, okay. I was like, what elephant in the room?
And the fact that at one point Shade vehemently exclaims, ooh, I hate him, Liam.
Oh, so that's the real reason that you were put off for this episode. It was grating because they were being mean to you directly.
They were picking on me, Regan.
Oh, they were looking directly into the camera and being like, yes, you.
That Liam, look at his Facebook page. He's so handsome.
Yeah, isn't it so nice that you can finally meet someone who's not just all about your looks?
Yeah, I mean, I really just want to find a nice little blind girl who... Jesus Christ. Oh.
Yeah, so this whole B-plot is like, oh no, but what if they're going to date? And then Matt private investigates Liam and then tells Jules that he private investigated Liam. And then she gets mad at him. And then she invites Liam over for movies. And then Matt and Liam have a nice chat.
You're skipping over some important details here. Because first she says, you're officially a dick, and storms out. And then when she invites everyone over for movies, she's on the phone with Matt, and near the end of the phone call, after he's apologized, he hears Liam's voice, and it wasn't just a movie night with the girls. There's a boy there.
Scandal.
Also, they're watching Unfriended, which is a terrible horror movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it, but they did a Flophouse on it, and it sounds very, very bad.
It sounds so bad that I think I could probably sit through it as someone who doesn't like horror movies.
If I remember correctly, that's the one in which a girl commits suicide because people took a video of her having pooped herself drunk at a party, and then while they're all having video Skype chat, she appears as a ghost and picks them off one by one.
Okay, I knew she appeared as a ghost in a Skype chat, but I did not know that's why she killed herself.
Well, that's the hidden twist. Spoilies for Unfriended. Don't watch it.
I am speechless.
About my cavalier attitude towards spoilies or that plot twist?
About the plot twist.
Okay.
Like, that's such a weird thing to write into a movie. Oh my god.
Matt learns to swallow his hatred for young men and has, at the very end of the episode, has a chat with this Liam kid and is like, you're all right. You are interested in my daughter because she's the only girl you know who isn't just after you for your looks because you're so attractive.
Which is also a weird thing for a 14-year-old to say.
Yeah, he was being, like, weirdly introspective then, though, so I guess it was sort of meant to communicate to Matt that he had hidden depths than just what was on his Facebook page.
Right.
And then Matt recommends him the Andre Agassi autobiography he's been talking about all episode.
Yeah.
Biography? Autobiography?
Autobiography, I think.
Right. Probably ghostwritten, though, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Throwing Matt Shade at Andre Agassi.
Well, he's a busy man, doesn't have time to write his own biography.
Yeah, he's got tennis to play. He's got aces to hit.
Brands to promote.
Services to serve.
Rallies to rally.
Did he do the bond? Did he do bonds? Did he wear bonds underwear? Very comfy undies? Was that him?
I don't know.
Okay. It's unimportant.
But you know what is important? The A-plot of this episode.
Hey, why do I have in my notes here the phrase, fake dog boarding? Was that in this episode?
No.
Oh, yes, it was. Yeah, I remember what that is now. We'll get to that in due course.
Will we?
Yeah.
Angie
gets a call from Thomas King, author. She answers the phone and is like, yes, I know who you are, Mr. King. So I guess on his end of the line, he was like, hello, I'm Thomas King. Do you know who I am?
I gave him more benefit of the doubt and thought he was like, hi, I'm Thomas King, internationally acclaimed author of...
And activist.
Yeah.
My friend Frank Garrison has been hospitalized because someone's tried to kill him, and he sent me a cryptic series of tapes. Can you come and help me?
So he hasn't actually watched the tapes by this point, has he?
Oh, no,
he has because the tapes told him to hire...
This is actually what I would do for my impression of Mr. Garrison, not Thomas King.
That's true, actually. Yeah, that was a very... That was a Garrison, wasn't it?
Yeah. But they're both old white men, so whatever.
Same.
I actually was seized by a delusion near the end of this episode that Garrison was played by George Lucas.
I absolutely understand that.
He looks a bit like him.
He does look a bit like
him. With the beard and the chin and that hair quiff.
Yeah, like the weird old man hair quiff.
When I was writing The Devil's Playground, I thought, what if Mr. Lovegrove wasn't a secret homosexual in this, but he was a robot? That's my Lucas.
That was amazing. So basically, Frank Garrison is in hospital in a coma.
Mm-hmm. Because someone tried to burn down his house while he was in it.
Yes. Thomas King has a series of, well, he says tapes, but they're videos.
Yeah, on like an iPad or something.
Which is interesting because Frank Garrison is a famed recluse and technophobe.
See, yeah, they did say tapes, didn't they? I thought I must have just imagined that.
No, I'm sure they said tapes continually.
Yeah. Maybe King converted them for easy access after he watched them.
Yeah, that's probably it.
Hello, I'm Frank Garrison. If you're watching this, then I am dead.
Is that another 13 Reasons Why joke?
No, this is what happens in the episode.
Oh, okay, that's a good point, yeah.
In the red envelope is 5 bullets that were left on my windowsill. Someone's trying to kill me, evidently. To stop my new book. In the blue envelope is lots of money. Please hire a private investigator to figure out who did this to me.
Thank you.
Goodbye. And now I die.
So,
it'd be good if he was filming it while his house was catching fire in the background.
How would he get it to the post office?
A convenient pervert who happened to be lurking in the bushes outside. Oh, there is a convenient pervert in this episode.
There is a convenient,
pulling that nonsense.
Oh yeah, okay. So he lives on Ellis Island, right?
Ellis Island?
No.
No. That's
what's it called?
In New York?
Where is this show fucking set?
Surely it's in set in like Canada, because it's Canadian.
I thought it was set in like Seattle for some reason. And then this episode, I was like, oh, yeah, okay, well, I missed the name of the island, but it must be Ellis Island because you can still see the city from wherever they are.
Well, they didn't they always just said the island, but I assume that it was the island. It's one of the islands near Toronto, I assume.
Right, okay.
Because they talk about going, my reference point for Canadian geography is where they go and stop podcasting yourself live shows. And they often talk about going to the island in that. And there was a long discussion in a previous episode about the difficulties of the ferry closing at 10, which is a key plot point in this episode.
It is.
So they take the case.
Yes.
They go to the island.
Well, no, first.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Shade is unfamiliar with the works of Frank Garrison.
Or Thomas King.
Yeah, he doesn't read. He only reads sports biographies, which, as we've established, comes up a lot.
Yeah. Also, that's a wrap on Thomas King being in this episode.
Yeah. He doesn't come back.
No.
So what happened was Frank has only ever written one book, The Devil's Playground, 25 years ago, because it came out and it was like a big hit allegory for modern day politics set in the 1900s.
And referring to 1990s politics.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it would be if it was modern day, but written 25 years ago, Liam.
Of course, yes.
So, there's a character who is gay, secretly gay, and it turned out that was based on Senator Chris Lovegrove, who then killed himself the week after because then everyone knew that he was gay.
He was also a famously homophobic senator. So it's buying into that sort of trope, which I'm not a huge fan of like, oh, clearly all these homophobic politicians are in the closet themselves.
Some of them are just dicks.
So yeah, this inadvertently outed him and then he committed suicide and that drove Garrison to seclusion on this island and to alcoholism.
Yes.
So they get on this island and they go investigate a bit.
They're doing a little investigate and then Matt Shade, newly minted PI with his newly minted PI skills, notices a guy, Peep and Tom at 5 o'clock. So Angie does the old makeup compact mirror.
Oh yeah, and she gets a look at him skulking in the bushes.
Yep.
And then they do the old reach around where Angie pretends to be talking on the phone to distract his attention. And Matt sneaks around behind him and is like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, I don't think that's called a reach around.
No, I'm pretty sure that's what that is.
All right.
Because you're reaching around to catch them unawares.
Oh, okay, yep.
You'll take their front by surprise by coming from the back.
Oh, God. Okay. So we meet sound recording guy.
Larry Fleischman.
Oh, there you go. I didn't think we ever learned his name.
He's a guy who wanders around with headphones and some sort of weird radar dish, recording ambient soundscapes for professional reasons.
But also he was just recording Angie because he wanted to know what was happening.
Yeah.
So he recommends that they speak to the Schmidts.
Well, first they interrogate him a bit and he's like, oh, look, here's my alibi. I was on top of the haunted lighthouse between 1 and 2 a.m. on the night in question. Look, all of my soundscapes are GPS tagged. Check it out.
Check it out, they do, and that checks out.
So as you said, he recommends they go and speak to the Schmidts.
So this is the...
Their neighbours?
Yeah, their neighbours. They're a couple. They have a highly acclaimed
interior.
Interior. I was going to say international, which it kind of is. They have an interior design show called A Tale of Two Schmidties.
Oh, I didn't catch that. That's good.
Which is funny because one of them's American, one of them's English.
Yes, yes, you're picking up on all sorts of subtleties that slip me by.
Yeah.
And by subtleties, I mean obvious jokes. Shade is a fan of their program.
He is. Angie does not know who they are.
Now, these guys just have, like, completely not overlapping cultural reference circles.
No, which is interesting.
Yeah, that sort of really adds something to the dynamic of the show, doesn't it? They're a real odd couple.
I meant it's interesting that, like, they're the same age and yet they don't seem to have any...
interests in common.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. But also, I was only half being sarcastic with that other thing.
Well,
I
yeah,
said.
It does. It does make a fun thing.
The Schmidties are big old gossips on the island.
Yeah, playing right into stereotype. The sound guy actually records them as, not records them.
Describes
them as people who love to spill gossip.
Yeah, and spill the gossip they do.
They do, to be fair. There's been a girl coming around who said she was his daughter wearing geek chic cat eye glasses. And they had a fight just before their house went up in flames.
Yeah. Who could this mysterious blonde woman be? He does have a daughter.
Well, we better go and find her then.
Yeah. They go to her chic photography studio where she's doing a shoot because it turns out she's a famous photographer or something.
It does mislead you a little bit though because it does a big close up on the blonde model.
Mm.
And then they're like, Eliza, and then she turns around. Whoa.
Hey, guys, you're here in my photography studio, I see. Oh, you're here about my dad? Ugh.
Oh, yeah, she wants to shoot nudes of them as a couple.
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah, when they were like, can we have a word with you? And she was like, oh, yeah, I'd love to shoot some nudes of you guys. What?
Kind of jumping from A to C there.
But I guess if you're a photographer, you would assume.
Would you? There are a lot of places you can go before nudes.
I don't know. Maybe that's what couples get when they get couple photography.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. So she...
hasn't seen her dad in 10 years.
But...
last time they met, they were arguing about...
royalties.
Yeah, like child support royalty sort of things, so she could get into a prestigious art school.
Yeah, because she was unemployed and wanted to reinvent herself. He doesn't even know that she's a photographer now.
So she says, I get the impression that they don't really hold each other in any particular ill will.
No.
They each think the other person doesn't want anything to do with them.
Yeah. Also, before this, I think we've spoken to the publisher because he's told Shade and Angie about the fact that the daughter was always hitting him up for money.
Yeah, that's right.
The publisher is also very disgustingly republishing The Devil's Playground.
To capitalize off
the tragedy.
The tragedy of the death of Frank Garrison.
He's not actually dead yet, but might be. So
if he is, then that would...
gotta prepare.
That would bolster sales in quite a way.
It
sales
would
which
indeed.
Are down 20%.
Down 20 whole percentages.
Despite it being on the curriculum of every college in the country.
That's a good point. Eliza also points them toward the university fan club, which she says kept her dad in supply of, like, nubile young women.
Yep.
Which is gross, but also it's never addressed whether he was actually sleeping with anyone.
Maybe she's projecting a bit there because of irritation with her estranged father.
Yeah, but there was one woman who was going to his house with her geek chic glasses, and that's Sarah Marcinet.
Dog walker / lit master's student.
So they hire a dog.
They establish fake dog boarding scheme.
Oh my God, yes.
And go see her.
She sees through their shit pretty quickly.
Because she also boards dogs. She doesn't just walk them.
They don't know that at the time, though.
Yeah, they do. They scoped her out on Facebook, and that's why they put this scheme together.
No, but they say if she walks dogs, she might also board them.
Right, but that's what they go there for.
And then just show up with a dog.
So I assume there's some stuff happening off screen there.
Well, yes, that's true.
Such as the purchase of this dog, leasing.
Yes. So, yeah, she cuts through the shit pretty quickly. She's like, who are you? And then she gives them all the information. So...
So that was convenient.
Yeah. What happens is... What happened was...
What will happen will be.
She started her Lit Masters and then saw the Devil's Playground on the list and... She's Chris Lovegrove's daughter.
What? Sarah Lovegrove?
Yep. After her dad's death, her and her mum went back to using her mum's maiden name.
There was a time where she wanted to kill Frank Garrison, but she didn't do it this time.
She didn't, because he's actually been mentoring her through her own book.
After she saw his name on the curriculum, she eventually read the book, loved it, sought him out. The rest was history, RE mentorships. And it was really sort of helpful for both of them as a sort of grieving process.
Part of the healing process.
Yeah, because she saw that evidently he was just in as much pain over it as she was.
Well, also, and the reason they had a fight, so they go and talk to Frank.
Who's awake now.
Yeah, who's awake
now. In the hospital.
They go to talk to him in the hospital. And he is very belligerent, needlessly so. But what happened was he took it out on Sarah because he just had a fight with his publisher because he sent Sarah's book to the publisher and the publisher wouldn't publish it.
Yeah. So he was, you know, emotions were running high. He got drunk.
And then he yelled at her.
And then when he woke up, the house was on fire.
Yeah.
Because the fight was all a dream.
So how do we get from there to... They have to go back to the island?
They think it's the Schmitties because... They think that the upcoming book is about them and their secrets. So they go check them out.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the Schmitties think that the book, because of all the controversy with the Devil's Playground, they're like, well, everyone on this island's got secrets, so...
Clearly he's writing about the secrets on the island.
And clearly he knows our secrets.
We're so interesting. Why would he ever not write about us?
To be fair, their secret is pretty huge.
Yeah. What's their secret, you ask? Well, they find out from the production company that one of them's out of town at a meeting, so they go sneak into the house to find out.
Well, yeah.
Matt is tailing the other one while he's on a walk, and Angie bustles on in.
She does. She picks a lock. She gets in. She's doing some rustling. She goes to go into their bedroom.
First, she finds a packet of 20 bullets with 5 missing in the cupboard. Of course, those 5 bullets were placed on the
windowsill, so that's pretty incriminating. Pretty incriminating.
Yeah. Around this point, the guy realizes that Matt's following him. Some awkward conversation ensues. Oh, Matt says something that makes the guy say, "Are you coming on to me?" And he says, "Would it help?"
And then it's not that conversation's not more awkward than the one Angie's about to have, because she opens the bedroom door and there is Will or Gil in bed with a lady.
A human woman?
A human woman.
No. But he's gay. Everyone knows that. It's all about what his show's about.
Well, it turns out when they were in college, they were roommates and a TV producer liked their chemistry.
They've been pretending Will and Gil Schmidt together.
Maybe they're actually legally married.
I guess so, maybe. Though I think Ben Acker and Ben Blacker were roommates in college, writers of The Thrilling Adventure Hour, among other things.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it was just done alphabetically.
Yeah.
Regardless.
This is not important to
the plot.
Everyone's in the same room together now. Let's hear the secrets.
So yeah, basically, they've just been pretending to be a gay couple for ages. Frank had seen one of them with his girlfriend.
Well, they fell into it in a sort of awkward way because one of them is gay, one of them is straight. They were rooming together, they got this offer, but the production company assumed they were gay and they just kind of went with it.
Yeah, now that's their whole livelihood, so.
Yes, and Frank had seen one of them snogging his babe while out and about, so they assumed that was the fodder for the new big scandal book.
Yeah, so they left the bullets, but they didn't burn down the house. But they're going to help Angie and Matt find out who did by spreading a rumour.
The rumour, of course, being that he had a backup of his book in his shed, which is not burnt down. Angie and Matt stake out that their shed.
Not before they have some definite they will vibe moments.
You're shipping these guys hard.
No, the show is shipping these guys hard.
Matt needs some magnesium. Keeps your mind sharp.
Well, but Angie rebuffs his magnesium carrots, saying they obviously don't work.
They were carrots, weren't they?
Sick burn. Sick burn. Well, they were orange and crunchy. I assume they were carrot sticks.
After a prolonged stakeout scene and phone call with Jules, someone starts breaking into the cabin. Who is it?
Also, Angie has fallen asleep on Matt's shoulder. He started reading her copy of The Devil's Playground. He's realised that it was a gift from her dad and she keeps rereading it to try and keep her dad's memory alive. They have like a bonding chat. But then, yes, what? Someone's breaking into the shed.
It's Larry Fleischman, ambient the soundscape recordsman.
Cable guy.
The cable guy.
There are cables involved with what he does.
I guess so.
So now we get to the most unrealistic scene of the whole show.
As we know.
Super well. So we're back in Larry's home studio.
Yeah. He's playing some ambient soundscapes of people he's taped having sex.
Yeah. So he...
He is a peeping Tom, essentially.
He absolutely is.
He's an eavesdropping Tom.
Did I accidentally hear some people having sex? Yeah. Did I record it for my own enjoyment? Absolutely. Does that make me a criminal? And Angie's like, yeah.
Oh, what?
Yeah, it do. So that was weird. But then they're like, oh, wait, but that audio that you had from the night of the fire.
Oh, we blitzed over the fact that Angie checked the CCTV footage of the island and no personal watercraft left the island, so...
Oh, yes,
up to this point, they'd been assuming that it had to be someone who was on the island. But this ambient soundscape reveals the sound of what?
A scuba diver.
Yeah, the tank depressurizing, a sound which Matt is intimately familiar with because of his lifestyle as a rich idiot.
A sound which just sounded like noise to me.
Like that.
But they get that sound because it was really windy that night, but...
How does that help them get it? I don't know.
He can clean up the sound so good.
While it's still playing, in fact. Audacity certainly can't do that.
And also while, like, just with the jiggle of some buttons.
That's how you input things on buttons. You jiggle them.
Yeah. It made me angry when I think about the hours of editing that I have to do for this piece of shit. So, who do they know that scuba dives?
No one that's been explicitly pointed out to us, but they saw a photo of on publisher Elliot's wall of him scuba diving. Did we see that? I don't remember.
I don't think we did.
Ergo, he a murderer. No, he not. He's an attempted murderer.
Well, but no, he, as far as he knows, he is a murderer because
they go and tell. Well, first they go and tell.
Tell Frank, yes.
They go and tell Frank about that, and he's like, that Elliot's a bastard. Oh no, I'm coughing. Am I dying? Maybe. End of scene.
And then it cuts to a press conference that Elliot's giving because Frank has tragically died.
No, he's fallen into a coma and looks unlikely to recover.
Oh, right. Same thing.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I'll keep that in mind, should that ever happen to you. And I have power of attorney as a podcast co-host, of course.
Absolutely. That's the legally binding contract that we've entered into.
Yeah.
So?
He's like, well, Frank's dead, but we're pleased to announce that we're reprinting The Devil's Playground in new limited edition covers. And also, we have this other book that he had been secretly working on that he'd left behind all this time. The Labyrinth of whatever.
The Dancing in the Labyrinth, I think?
It's a political allegory, a new animal farm. He definitely wrote it. It wasn't Sarah Lovegrove.
Well, but then Matt, Shade and Angie just bust on in, interrupt the press conference. But then you know who interrupts a press conference even more than they do? Frank, who's not in a coma.
I have to question the wisdom of Elliot's plan here.
I have to question the wisdom of his entire plan to burn down someone's house, but
true.
Go on.
If he published the new book under Frank's name, Sarah would know and could probably prove that she wrote it. She would have drafts and manuscripts and stuff.
That's a good point. I suppose if you're at the point where you're going to burn down someone's house to make more sales, you're probably not actually thinking that far ahead.
True, I guess so. It seems like an ill-conceived scheme to me.
No, it absolutely does. You've made a very good point. Anyway...
So they're like, take him away, boys, and the boys take him away.
I was going to say book him, but I've already used that joke a bunch of times. So how many literary murders have we watched? I think this is at least the third.
Well, let's see. There's this one.
There was that one on Death in Paradise.
Refresh my memory.
I don't know, but it ended in a library and there was a book that they'd replaced with another book. And Castle. There we go. Three.
I don't remember the Death in Paradise one.
I think it was the first episode. It wasn't actually explicitly literary, but someone had like a book of people
who'd
been
coming. That was like a ledger though, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it was still a book on a bookshelf because that's how they figured it out because like the one book didn't match the rest of the... Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that was literary.
It wasn't literary, but it's the third time that I've used the bookum joke.
Okay, sure. So what will the fourth time be? We'll find out. Also, every episode of Castle, kind of, because he's a novel. He's the novelist in that, but especially the first one.
Yeah, the first one in particular.
And of course, Psyche can't read.
Oh yeah, I got to add that to our list of things that are definitely canon.
So, do you want to crack open our mystery envelopes? No, we can't because we have to do the debriefs first.
Wait, no, we don't.
We addressed that in the B plot rundown. Although I suppose there is one B plot one debrief to resolve, which is the fact that Garrison is going to move in with his daughter and rekindle their relationship.
Oh yeah, that's nice. And then she's taking some new author headshots for him.
He talks about how he thinks that Shade is good proof you can have like a good second act after your main career burns down. He says something like, "I'm going to try something new now, being a father." And for a second, it occurred to me that maybe he was going to say, "I'm going to try something new now." Ambient soundscapes. Maybe you've heard of
them. Oh my god. That would have been a way better ending.
Because he knew that Larry was using them for perverse purposes.
But also, like, was Larry a professional ambient soundscaper or was he just a pervert? Like, was he both?
I think he was both.
Okay, good to know. So, mystery envelopes.
Yeah, let's unseal the tank that we keep them in. Drain the mystery goo.
Oh, I thought you were making like a scuba diving.
Nope. I was speaking from the heart and it just happened to be the perfect analogy.
All right. Well, mine was 2706.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I had waited too long, but then I thought, no, they're trying to drag me kicking and screaming to Red Herring Central. So this is just after you found the bullets in the Schmidt's home.
Okay, yep.
They left the bullets there, but they aren't arsonists. It was an accidental fire because the sound guy said there was lots of wind that night, so maybe someone dropped a cigarette or something and it just lit the whole house up.
Oh man, that would have been really dissatisfying.
It would have. But also, I feel like that's a conclusion that you can only jump to having grown up in Australia.
Yeah, fair enough.
Like, that probably doesn't make any sense.
Not in Canada.
Canada,
the anti-Australia.
No. I like to call it cold Australia.
I wrote mine at 2842 when they were asking the Schmitties how fast they can spread a rumour. And again, I was leaning kind of on my genre knowledge here.
Yeah.
I wrote, it was Thomas King. And I assumed they wrote a book about, that the book was actually about him and that he needed to shut him up.
Ah.
Because at the start of the episode, Thomas made some offhand allusions to their raucous past at like writing conventions and stuff together. And I thought maybe some risky stuff might have happened there.
Interesting.
So.
But no, we never see Thomas King again.
No. I think my reasoning was that I was expecting it to be a twist that it wasn't someone on the island, but then who could it be?
Right, yeah.
And I thought I identified the publisher as the nothing character out of those two, but no, it was Thomas.
Well, there you go. But I suppose also, had we known that Thomas King was a real author,
that would have ruled him right out. Unless twist.
Unless this is his confession.
Oh, he wrote this episode to confess the murder of Frank Garrison, real fictional author.
I mean, it's not what happened, but wouldn't that be fucking insane?
Certainly would.
All right. Well, how are you feeling about Private Ass? Is it a hot lead or is this case going cold?
As I said, I kind of, towards the end of the episode, found the banter a bit grating. I think I might have had my fill now.
Yeah, I think we can definitely have it on the things to come back to shelf.
Yeah, certainly.
Because it's a fun time, but I think it's run its course.
Yeah, we'll be back
for
next
now.
Time.
The hockey season is over.
All right.
You know, no?
I get it.
Just wasn't good.
Right. It was fine.
All right, well, thank you for your honesty.
B+.
Oh, thank you.
On an American grading scale.
What does that mean?
Apparently they're really sort of harsh grading scales that they use in US schools. So like, if it's not an A, then like, what's the point?
Oh, okay. Cool.
Cool.
Well, that's us. Done.
We'll see you next time on Mystery Twins Detective Agency.
We will. In the meantime, tweet at us at mtdapod, email us at mtdapod@gmail.com, and our theme music is In the Crowd by the Years.
And for now,
and
no yachts.
Hustle always wins.
No shortcuts to success.
Pineapple doesn't clank.
Unless you put it on pizza.
It still doesn't clank. What the
what
fuck?
What if the pizza's made of tin?
Oh, you got me there.
Yeah.
I didn't see that one coming.
You didn't see that one coming.
I didn't.
A twist worthy of Mr. Castle himself. What's his name?
Exactly.
Frank?
Frank Castle's a bad name. Surely that's not his name.
No, that's the Punisher. I keep doing that.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Castle.
Jimmy Jimbo Castleton.
Yeah, that must be it. All right, well.
No yachts.
See you next time, junior detectives.
We're not really twins.